China's military launches live fire drills around Taiwan. Plus, Europe's demand for coal spurs a global mining boom. And the war in Ukraine begins to shift south as Kyiv aims to retake lost territory.
If Russia consolidates its control in this part of Ukraine, it could use it then as a springboard to move on to Mykolaiv right now, and then further on to Odessa, the main port of Ukraine.
It's Thursday, August 4th. I'm Luke Vargas with the Wall Street Journal, and here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. The Chinese military has begun live-fire military drills around Taiwan to protest a visit by U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi that Beijing says violated its sovereignty. The drills come unusually close to the self-governing island, causing delays for ships and air traffic. Some experts have compared the drills, which effectively encircle Taiwan, to a temporary blockade. The four-day exercises are taking place in six zones delineated by the Chinese military, several of which face Taiwan's biggest commercial ports and overlap with what the island claims as its territorial waters. In Washington, U.S. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan criticized the Chinese drills, blaming them for escalating tensions unnecessarily. The U.S. Senate has ratified adding Finland and Sweden to NATO. The resolution passed by a margin of 95-1, with leaders of both parties portraying the move as key to American security around the world following Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer.
Putin has tried to use his war in Ukraine to divide the West. Instead, today's vote shows our alliance is stronger than ever.
According to the NATO Parliamentary Assembly, just seven of NATO's 30 members still need to ratify Finland and Sweden's accession before the two countries can officially become members. The latest effort to revive the Iran nuclear deal is set to kick off today. After 16 months of talks, U.S., EU, and Iranian officials are due to convene in Vienna, though expectations of a breakthrough aren't high. Iran has refused to negotiate directly with the U.S., so European officials are mediating between the sides. A final agreement has proved elusive on several key points, including an Iranian demand that Washington lift terror sanctions on Iran's elite military Revolutionary Guards Corps, something U.S. President Joe Biden has publicly vowed not to do. And Tesla investors are expected to clear the way for Elon Musk's EV company to complete its second stock split in 2 years at its annual meeting of stockholders later today. The company said the 3-for-1 stock split is designed to make ownership more accessible to employees and individual investors. In the wake of the war in Ukraine, Europe is weaning itself off of Russian coal. That's a story we've covered here before. But where Europe is turning for that coal and the urgency with which it's seeking new supplies, well, that is a rapidly evolving tale that takes us to far-flung corners of the world, as soaring coal prices create economic windfalls for producers everywhere from the outback to the U.S. Midwest, as well as to Colombia, where we're joined now by the Journal's South America Bureau Chief, Juan Forero. Juan, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
It's a pleasure.
Juan, Europe is on a global hunt for coal right now, especially as the EU's embargo on Russian coal imports begins in now less than 2 weeks. You are in Colombia, one of the many countries where Europe's demand for coal now is very visible. Tell us what you're seeing.
Colombia is one of the biggest exporters of coal, but if you compare coal production here to, say, the U.S. or China or even Indonesia, it's quite small. But everything counts. And so what we're seeing here with the rising price of coal, I mean, it's gone from like $130 earlier in the year to about $400. This is per ton. This has led to a ramp up of production. Now, the place where we went to here in Colombia is the mountains outside of Bogota. This is not so far from the capital. These are high mountain areas with a lot of little small towns and small mining companies. And a lot of these places that have been really sort of shut down during the pandemic have picked up. And now the coal that they are producing, which used to be just for the domestic market, is going to the international market and to Europe.
And what kind of impact is this renewed activity having on the local community?
You can see it right away when you get there. The place that we went to was Topaga, which is a small town. But what you basically see is people buying motorcycles. You see people redoing their houses, buying cars. That's because these are mom and pop mining outfits. So these miners are earning 2-3 times what they used to make, and it really makes a difference. I want to point out, though, that Colombia has these small mines close to Bogota, but in the far northeast of the country, not too far from Venezuela, are where the big international mining companies are, you know, Glencore and Drummond from Alabama. And of course, those companies operate pretty much solely to export. So they too are in on the windfall here at this point.
And Juan, is there enough supply to meet the newfound European demand for coal?
I think that churning out coal for Europe is going to be difficult because there's been a lack of investment. There are all kinds of logistical problems. Some mining companies lack workers and so forth. But the International Energy Agency in Paris says that the world should be able to supply to Europe, in part because China is consuming less imported coal. They're producing more coal in China. They don't have to import as much, and some of that coal can be redirected to Europe.
That was the Wall Street Journal's South America Bureau Chief, Juan Forero, joining us from Bogota, Colombia. Juan, thank you for the update.
Thank you.
Coming up, let's head to Ukraine, where the next phase of the war there is beginning to take shape in the country's south. That story after the break.
Your Money Briefing will explore what you need to know to become a homeowner and how to sustain your home by learning ways to manage the costs from unexpected expenses.
You're basically always in a state of checking. You're always keeping your eye open for anything that could be going wrong with your house. Your house is a complicated machine. It has a lot of systems and components in it, and those systems and components are getting older, they're wearing out.
You can get early access to our series, Buying a Home and Keeping It, on WSJ Special Access, only for WSJ subscribers.
A major new phase of the war in Ukraine is looming. Armed with Western weapons, Ukraine is hoping to retake the southern region of Kherson, parts of which Russia captured in the early days of the war. And Ukraine wants to get this battle started before long, since it worries Russia will continue to consolidate its control of the region in the coming months. Wall Street Journal Chief Foreign Affairs Correspondent Yaroslav Trofimov joins us from the city of Mykolaiv in southern Ukraine with a look at this potential next focal point of the war and what to expect. Yaro, hello.
Great to be on the show.
Yaro, let's start by taking a step back. Which stage of the war in Ukraine are we currently in?
Yeah, there's been 3 phases to the war so far. There was the first phase in February and March, when Russia launched an all-out assault on Ukraine from several directions, from the north, from the east, from the south, and really didn't expect much resistance and went for the capital, Kiev, expecting it to collapse in a matter of days. That failed, and Russian troops withdrew from northern Ukraine. They were pushed back a little bit in the south, here in Mykolaiv, for example, and they really focused on Donbas. And then there was this battle for Donbas for the last 3 months. That battle was inconclusive. Russia has achieved some objectives, but really hasn't been able to dislodge the Ukrainians from most of Donbas. And so now we're going back to this multi-front war. We are seeing a renewal of hostilities and new forces being pushed into the south, and new forces being pushed in the north and in Kharkiv, and obviously still continuing in Donbas. But by and large, outside of Donbas, lines have been static for the last 3 months, and they haven't really moved much in Donbas either.
Okay, so now the focus is on the south. Why is that region so important?
Well, Kherson is the only regional capital that Ukraine has lost to Russia since the invasion began. And it sits on the west bank of the Dnieper River, which is a powerful river that cuts through the country. So if Russia consolidates its control in this part of Ukraine, it could use it then as a springboard to move on, to launch a move on to Mykolaiv, where I am now, and then further on to Odessa, the main port of Ukraine. And it's a stated goal of the Russian government to take those areas and to deprive Ukraine of its access to the Black Sea.
Let's talk now about timing. What explains this shift that we're seeing now in the focus of the war to this region?
Well, there are several things happening at the same time. On one hand, there's a political deadline because Russia has distributed citizenship documents, has introduced the Russian currency, and is now planning a referendum in occupied areas of South Ukraine, particularly Kherson, on annexing those regions to Russia the way it annexed the Crimean Peninsula in 2014. So obviously a Ukrainian military operation would seek to render such a referendum impossible by, for example, retaking Kherson City, the capital of that region. But there are also military considerations. Ukraine now has received Western weapons, particularly the HIMARS artillery systems, that have allowed it to severely damage and disable the main bridge that connects Kherson City to the Russian-controlled areas in the rest of southern Ukraine, and really now has the capacity to contemplate military action, especially as those Western weapons have blunted the Russian offensive in the Donbas region in the east, which really was the main theater of this war for the past 3 months or so.
And so what should we expect to see if and when this next phase of the war in the south gets underway?
Both the Russians and the Ukrainians are pouring additional forces to the region. And Ukrainians are also wary of Russia trying to launch an offensive to preempt the Ukrainian push. As for when, it's really hard to say. I mean, Ukraine is busy training more and more troops. It's also awaiting the shipment of more weapons, especially anti-aircraft systems that are very critical in any operation in open terrain in the fields of South Ukraine, in the steppes, especially considering that Russia has such an advantage in air power. So they're not really willing to take risks because the failure of the Kherson offensive probably allow the Russians to push through Ukrainian lines and go all the way to Odessa. So they've been very careful the way they're planning it. And I think the strategy for now is by destroying those bridges and other communication lines to starve the Russian forces in Kherson of weapons and ammunition and food and fuel, and to render their position untenable going forward. And the Ukrainian military is very tight-lipped by its plans because obviously to be successful in operation on such open terrain must carry an element of surprise. So could be a matter of weeks or could be next spring.
How would you say these two sides, Ukraine and Russia, stack up against each other as we head into this next phase?
Russia has a very sizable advantage in the number of artillery that it has, but it doesn't have the precision weapons that the Ukrainians are getting from the US and other countries, particularly the HIMARS, which have really been a game changer of sorts because Russia's air defense systems are unable to intercept those strikes. Every day there are several strikes in a certain region in the Russian occupied areas. As far as manpower is concerned, both sides are exhausted. Both sides have lost thousands of the best trained troops and are now sending to the front lines people who've had very limited training. So obviously the Ukrainians have a much higher morale because they're defending their own country. That doesn't necessarily offset the advantages that the Russians have in just the sheer mass and their stocks of ammunition and weapons.
That was Wall Street Journal Chief Foreign Affairs Correspondent Yaroslav Trofimov joining us from the southern Ukrainian city of Mykolaiv. Yaro, stay safe. Thanks so much.
Great to be on the show. Thank you.
And finally, are you also finding it difficult to relax this summer? According to a survey commissioned by the American Psychological Association, about 87% of adults say that rising prices due to inflation are a significant source of stress. Combine that with summer travel woes and a lingering pandemic, and you've got a perfect storm. However, WSJ health reporter Andrea Peterson says that one science-backed pick-me-up is surprisingly close at hand.
One of the most powerful things you can do to de-stress this summer is to get in the habit of taking a walk outside with a friend. This is just one very easy activity actually combines three of the most effective stress-reducing techniques, according to psychologists and scientific research: physical exercise, spending time in nature, and social connection. And what all these things combined do is they actually help normalize these hormonal changes that can happen when we're chronically stressed. And it also boosts the emotional resources, the resilience strategies that we have to cope.
And that's What's News for Thursday morning. We'll be back tonight with a news show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.